Welcome to Paddling Adventures Radio. I'm Sean Rowley, and with me is Derek Specht.
Hello.
Mother Nature has had her last winter hurrah.
I know. What's up with that?
She had to get it out of her system. One last little freezing. One little dumping of a couple of inches of snow. Frozen snow. Throw some rain on top.
My wife was commenting this morning. She looked out the window. She's like, what the... And then a little bit later, she goes, huh, Mother Nature is honoring the first opening day for the Toronto Blue Jays in 1977, because today was the day.
Was the day.
It's like, yes.
Didn't it snow then, too?
It did. It did for their opening day. That was when they still had the outside stadium, 77.
CNE Stadium.
Mm.
Yeah, that was a long time ago.
I'm sure Mother Nature follows these...
It was in her calendar. Yes. It was in her calendar. No, I got up this morning and said, oh, that looks nice, a little bit of snow. And then I got outside.
Yeah, it
was. And it was ice.
Yeah, it was like very solidified snow.
Mm-hmm.
I had a hard time dragging it off the top of my car.
I had a hard time walking on it down the side while walking the dog at 6 o'clock this morning. Should have put some skates on and just let her pull me.
There you go.
But, yeah, this is winter's. Last hurrah.
Last hurrah.
I hope. Oh, no, it is. It is.
I remember, I'm going to say it was 2002. It was just one of my first years at my current job. And we had snow and cold in first week of June. And then it was still very cold in mid-June. I think that was 2002, yeah.
Well, all this better start melting because we got trips coming in May. So,
yep. Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I've been seeing that too. So, a buddy of mine, he's been trying to get me to go on his May trip. He's going to do Algonquin from Tim Creek or Tim Lake down to Canoe. And he says, yeah, you know, third week of May. It's like, no, that's when the bugs are out. But I don't think the bugs are going to be out now. Because, like, there's people saying that there's still 18 inches of ice on most lakes in Algonquin.
Yeah, there's still a lot of ice up there, but I have a feeling it's going to, once it starts melting,
yes,
it's going to be,
it'll be quick.
Fast. So those rivers are going to be high and
yes.
Fast.
Yeah, yeah.
You're not going to have to worry about lining or anything, unless you're going the other way.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, no, that's going to be a bit brutal, but...
Mm-hmm.
No, I think it's the second week of May. And then I'm up in Temagami the long weekend.
Oh, yeah?
So I got two trips in May. Yeah.
Hmm.
Huzzah!
I don't like bug season. If it's really early before the hatch, what was it when I remember doing Whitefish Lake early May, mid-May, and it was like Bo and Mike and Preacher and... Anyways, it was... it snowed partway through the week... And which was wild, and we're out there catching some nice fish. But then on the last day and a half, the bugs started biting. It's like, whoa, we were saved most of the week. But for most of the week, early part of the week, when we were canoeing across, I think it was Dixon, and you could see this undulating layer of blackness about 6 feet above your head. It was this, like, about 2 feet thick across the whole lake above your heads. And it's like, whoa. But they weren't biting. They were just...
They were preparing.
They were forming up their battle plan.
Right.
But yeah, they weren't biting just yet. It was weird to be in so many bugs and they just kind of bounced off you, but none of them were biting.
Yeah.
But I think it was just right at the first hatch.
Yeah. I really don't care about them. I
don't care for them.
I've been bitten so much my entire life that it doesn't even faze me as much as it used to.
I don't like it.
Yeah. I don't like it. No, sir, I don't like it. It's Mother Nature, man. It's what it is. The way I look at it, if you want to be out there, that's the payment.
Yep.
You gotta be bitten and harassed and all that stuff. But let me ask you this. Would you rather be bitten by mosquitoes or a bear?
Well,
your choice, at least, or a snake.
At least the bear is a quick death.
Not necessarily. But, I mean, it'll be quicker than a mosquito.
True, true.
Yeah. No, I just take it as it's part of the deal.
I take it
just
as...
Just like rain.
I take it as a... I don't kind of camp at this season.
Yeah, no, it's the same thing as going out and you're traveling and it's raining.
Hmm.
It's part of it. Part of the experience.
I don't mind the rain. I'm okay with the rain. Yeah. I can bundle up against the rain and still be comfortable and sit under a tarp, but the bugs, they just harass you.
Yeah. Oh,
HR is here.
Uh-oh. Shh. HR.
Which one's that?
Oh, that's Apollo. Apollo is here to check up on things. Hey, how are you? Helios is upstairs still, so. Speaking of Mother Nature, Gregory Thomas is a journalist for the San Francisco Chronicle, and he wrote an article. He says, because you never know when Mother Nature's going to put a kibosh on your plans.
Yes, exactly.
He says, the disappointing news came last week. Whitewater trip I'd be looking forward to that winds through gorgeous and seldom paddled granite canyons in the Sierra foothills had been abruptly canceled.
Abruptly.
Abruptly canceled. Why, you ask? Because of a frog.
So it's not just him. It canceled everybody's plans. Mm-hmm. Because, and this is a significant
thing.
Limited opportunity.
Yes. So when I read that, I'm thinking, oh, he must have gotten sick or something. No. Dozens of kayakers and rafters like me had been eager to get on the South Fork American River's Slab Creek Run, a remote stretch of water north of Placerville that's only recently become a viable paddling destination. Last Sunday was supposed to be one of the few days of the year when a reservoir there releases flows that transform the mellow river corridor into a 5-mile whitewater party of huge rapids that attract paddlers from around the state. When it goes off, it's a really special, spectacular run, says Trevor Kraft, the editor of Rafting Magazine, who grew up paddling in Sierra and has run Slab Creek many times. It's a harder section of whitewater with bigger rapids than what you'd find in other places around here. So a frog, you say. Everybody's now. What do you mean? It's canceled. I've had to cancel or postpone outdoor trips for a lot of reasons, which I think a lot of us have at some point in our multi-year careers of paddling have had to cancel for something. Usually having to do with weather or wildfire. But the reason this time surprised me, the record-setting March heat wave that obliterated the Sierra snowpack has triggered an early mating season for the foothill yellow-legged frog, an endemic species of cute amphibian with olive coloring and nubbly skin that emerges each spring to breed along the riverbanks when it warms up. I don't know how to say cute, but yeah, it's a pretty cool looking frog.
Endemic species are plants or animals native to a specific restricted geographic location.
Mm-hmm.
I heard you use the word endemic. I was like, what does that mean?
Not like pandemic.
I had to look it up.
It's a pandemic of frogs. The frog is found in mountain ranges across the state, but is listed as endangered or threatened in several regions. Discharging torrents of white water out of Slab Creek Reservoir Dam would risk blasting the frogs and their egg masses downstream. I assume we'd have to delay the trip for a few weeks, but a representative from the national nonprofit advocacy group American Whitewater corrected me. The frogs' larvae need months to mature.
Oh.
The whole Slab Creek season was kaput. Over before it began.
So you have to do this run
before the frogs come out.
And so because the frogs had an early breeding season, or no, early laying of egg season, because of the early melt,
mm-hmm,
and the warmer than normal spring there, you're done.
You're done like dinner. Okay, sort of off topic here. Frog larvae?
Tadpoles.
I don't think I've ever heard them called larvae before.
That's a bug thing.
Right?
Larvae are bugs.
Right?
Caterpillars.
Anyway, that was just a me thing.
Mm.
Balancing the sometimes competing priorities of wildlife protection and public recreation, in this instance, water storage and hydropower as well, is part of California's endless effort to appropriately manage its most precious natural resource. The situation was a small case study. South Fork American holds some of the best whitewater runs in the country, and they, in turn, support the tourism economies of rural mountain communities. Also, like a lot of Sierra's dammed and altered waterways, the river props up a massive hydropower system engineered to serve 900 square miles of the greater Sacramento area. And then it's the home turf of threatened species of frogs, turtles, and other creatures and plants.
It is larvae.
Is it larvae?
Hmm. It's not commonly used.
Yeah.
I'm looking at multiple references talking about their immature, fish-like immature stage of a frog's life cycle known as a polywog or a tadpole. A frog larvae.
See, I've only known them as polywogs and tadpoles.
Yeah.
You know what those people that call it a larvae are?
Scientists.
Wrong. Anyway, this shows that there's how much juggling they have to do between keeping the water going, the animal species, the environment, and trying to get some recreation stuff as well.
Finding the balance.
Making everybody happy. You're never going to make
everybody happy. You can never make everybody happy.
I called Scott Harding, American Whitewater Stewardship Associate, and an expert on Northern California river politics and paddling. The organization was key in advocating for recreational flow releases out of the Slab Creek Reservoir, which began a decade ago under a 50-year license order between the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission and the dam operator, the Sacramento Municipal Utilities District. So they had a whole bunch of talks to
make this happen. Agreed upon early season prior to the frog larvae hatch and yada, yada, yada.
We've been engaged in that process for 20 years and then bird-dogging the implementation of the whitewater release, as Harding said. Now there's an opportunity for people to go and enjoy that stretch of river, and it's starting to gain popularity. For a long time, the Slab Creek run only got going periodically during the big storm surges when the dam cut water from its spillway. It was kind of a local secret, enjoyed by a cohort of expert paddlers who monitor Sierra River flows the way most people check the weather forecast. American Whitewater sought to carve out a schedule of reliable releases so more paddlers could enjoy it. Per a settlement agreement, they are obligated to issue up to 12 releases for paddlers in spring during a typical water year. But many years since have been anything but typical, with seasons of heavy precipitation intermixed with extremely dry periods, so paddling opportunities at Slab Creek have proved to be infrequent and elusive. Recreational flows have been released in only 5 of the past 11 years.
Oh, so it's still quite rare. And
even the best laid plans, man.
Even when they do release per plan, it's sometimes interrupted by frog larvae.
Yeah, see? Mother Nature, she's not always on your side.
Mm-hmm.
Paddlers, including Croft, had planned to take advantage of the flow initially scheduled for last Sunday, which was to be the second release of the season ahead of several more in April. But amid one of the hottest March months on record, frog mating season came early.
Hmm.
The foothill yellow-legged frog has disappeared from more than 50% of its historic habitat here, a fate attributed to a slew of forces including dams, water diversions, logging, mining, livestock grazing, climate change, pesticides, off-road vehicles, disease, urban and agricultural expansion, and marijuana cultivation. According to the Center for Biological Diversity. Yes, those marijuana growers, they did it.
Blame them.
All the mining, logging, livestock grazing, climate, whatever. Those marijuana cultivators. It was all them, I'm telling you.
It was the alcohol lobbyists that asked for that to be added.
The creatures need warmer, slow-moving water to thrive. Their breeding stream habitat is typically shallow, rocky, and at least partially exposed to direct sunlight, according to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. The frogs' needs are reflected in the Slab Creek Reservoir License Order. 241-page document stipulates that once water temperatures in the Slab Creek area reach 53.6 degrees Fahrenheit for a week straight, the dam operator shall cancel the pulse and recreational flow events to spare the frog and its larvae the risk of getting washed away. Same criteria also applies to a nearby whitewater run on the South Fork American at Silver Creek, which is also now closed for the season.
So they don't release the water now?
Yep.
Unless
yep.
they have to due to storm surge.
Yeah.
But.
But?
It's a 241-page document?
Talking about
this
frogs.
This agreement?
Yep.
Well, it's not all about frogs, but it's all the whole agreement.
The whole agreement.
So a whole bunch of lawyers got paid a whole bunch of money, and they created a 241-page document for the controlled release of this into this watershed.
You know what that 241-page document is?
Money. Cash
no,
money.
No, just evidence that the lawyers did something.
Yes.
That's it.
Wow, why so long?
That's
insane.
Well, see if you can order yourself a copy, appendix, read it, and let us know.
Appendix A through E, and there's
right?
like...
Wow. Addendums and amendments and yeah.
Wow.
53.6 degrees. That's the one.
It's very specific.
53.5 for a week straight.
That's
you're
fine.
Still good
nope.
to
yeah.
go. But 0.6, shut that baby down. Harding called Slab Creek closure a disappointing outcome for paddlers, but said it's an acceptable toll of responsibly managing California's waterways. We don't want a release for the purpose of whitewater recreation to cause ecological harm, he says. We want to have healthy rivers, and this is a component of that.
I'm getting a clearer picture of why they're doing this. I understand now. Like it was, at first I was wondering what damage could a kayaker do, but it's not about the kayaks, it's about mm-hmm. the water flow.
Yeah,
because the frogs are laying their larvae,
eggs and whatnot, yeah,
then they want to not wash them downstream. They want them to be kept in whatever pockets and pools that the frogs will hatch and become little tadpoles. So it makes sense. I at first I was confused as to what damage a kayaker could do to this, but mm-hmm. I get it now.
Well, you gotta think, if they get washed downstream,
they'll just...
That may not be a good area for them to be.
Correct. Plus, it's they'll break up the egg nests mm-hmm. and all that stuff, right? So,
Shutting down Slab Creek for the year isn't harming the commercial rafting industry, since it's pretty niche run and the release schedule is relatively new. No guide companies offer trips there. There's a ton of excellent guided whitewater trips for novice rafters to sink their paddles into this time of year, including classics like the South Fork American 6-mile chili bar run downstream of Slab Creek, where
chili
there
bar.
Would be no frogs.
The chili bar run. Trey
chili
bar.
Bar is open.
Chili bar run.
The 6-mile chili bar run. Lost paddling season on one stretch of river seemed to me like a reasonable trade-off to help bolster an ailing species. I pulled up the newest wildlife monitoring report from Sacramento Municipality's Municipal Utilities District, anxious to learn how many frogs might be saved.
You want to know exactly what we're talking about here. If it's
and
like, are we saving
the,
six?
This would be the part that ticks me off. Surveyors did not observe foothill yellow-legged frogs or California red-legged frogs in 2025.
None.
Wait, what? Harding confirmed this surprising finding, clarifying in an email that annual surveys going back more than a decade have found no foothill yellow-legged frogs at Slab Creek. The frogs are not known to be present, although suitable habitat exists.
Are you kidding me?
I called Harding to make sure I was understanding things correctly. Paddling season was canceled to make room for frogs that haven't been found in the area for at least 10 years. Seems paradoxical, doesn't it? He said. Yes, it did, I replied. I wasn't upset, just perplexed. Then I thought about the whole situation more. How the frogs, the paddlers, and Sacramento's hydro-powered households are all nourished by and dependent on the downhill flow of this vital but limited resource. I marveled at how those sometimes competing interests have found ways to share it. Contentious as those negotiations can be, and how tiny creatures' prospects were being represented. Even though the terms of the license order ultimately canceled some good paddling this year, they felt like a nod toward optimism. Maybe this will be the year the frogs return. When I'm finally able to get out to Slab Creek and experience the place at peak fun, hopefully next year, I'll have a much greater appreciation for it.
Huh.
At this point, I'm going somewhere that has those frogs. I'm scooping up a bunch and I'm
bringing them,
moving them to Slab Creek. Just 'cause.
Maybe they should do that.
Right? Frog relocation.
Yeah.
Scoop them all up. There's buckets of frogs and just throw them at the top of the creek and let them swim on down.
That's something. Well, we haven't seen frogs here in a decade, but, you know, we have to protect them.
But it's a great opportunity for them to be here.
Yeah. Yeah.
I would just be looking at, say, what? Can you please repeat that slower? There are no frogs here.
When is the pterodactyl mating season? We should be watching out for that, too.
Right? Because that's going to close a few things. Mm-hmm. They're not there, but it's prime location. But, like I say, there's other things. There's turtles
it.
And stuff,
yeah.
too, there that they say.
Yeah.
And stuff. So you got to, just in case, I mean, maybe they just, the people that are going out there are just doing a half-assed job and not really looking all that great.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe they are there. You're just not looking. So see, now, if you know now is the time where they're breeding,
yeah.
you got to go there at night because you'll hear them.
Yeah.
Right? You figure you'll hear them all chirping and whatnot. But now when you go out and you start looking for the big egg masses, and see if you can see them.
Yeah, then you know.
Right? And how come it's all about the yellow-legged frogs and not the red-legged ones?
Or the purple-legged ones.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, because it talks about, you know, they haven't seen any yellow-legged or red-legged. But everything else in here is all about the yellow-legged frogs.
Mm-hmm. What is this recognized species at risk?
So is there too many red-legged frogs?
Maybe.
Paint them.
Paint them yellow.
Paint them yellow. We make fun.
This reminds me, I've got two big packages of frog legs in my freezer at home.
Really?
Yeah.
You actually eat them?
Well, no, they're in my freezer. I haven't eaten them yet. I've had frog legs before.
At home?
In restaurants.
Oh, so you just bought some to make
at
home.
I saw some at the grocery store. I was like, hey, look at that. I'll spring this on the kids one day.
You ought to do it. Make frog legs, sit in front of the TV and watch that Bugs Bunny one with the frog dance.
Hello, my baby. Hello, my honey.
Just freak them right out. So
I got that right away, didn't I?
You got that right away. So I went to work. I woke up the other morning. And for some reason, it was all probably under 5 seconds. I woke up, middle of the night. Do Bert and Ernie have a last name? And then I fell back asleep. But I remembered it when I woke up. What? So all day at work. Hey, you know, because people be asking questions, right, about something. I said, no, you know what? You shouldn't be asking questions about that job. What you should be asking is, do Bert and Ernie have a last name? The amount of Googling that went.
Big Bang Theory, Penny doesn't have a last name until she got married.
Right?
And she became Penny Hofstadter.
Right? Did she not have a last name?
They never came up ever in the whole series.
Well, what did they call her dad? Because he was in a couple of episodes.
Yeah, but they didn't call him by his last name.
Oh, they just call him by his first name?
Yep, just Sir and this, that, the other thing.
Yeah, I guess you're right. Huh. Anyway. So, yeah, start Googling to Bert and Ernie.
Last name.
Talking about cartoons, you know.
Well,
so.
Big Bird didn't have one either.
Sure he did. Big was his first name.
Bert was his last name.
Right? Oscar was his first name.
The Grouch.
The Grouch was his last name. Tickle Me is his first name. Elmo's his last name.
The Count. The
Count. Mr. Hooper.
Mr. Hooper.
Yeah.
Did he have a first name?
Yeah.
Mister.
Mister. Right? Yeah, because I think they called him Hooper.
And Mr. you just popped awake in the middle of the night and says,
just the middle of the night.
Hey.
This moment of reality brought to you by Sesame Street, the letter S, Bert and Ernie. Now, back to your regular scheduled snooze.
What the heck was that?
What's happening? Come on. Stop doing that. Anyway, yeah, that's my life. You can figure out what's going on in this head. Hey, I've got to live with me.
Yes, I know.
Speaking of making fun of things, though.
Oh, yes.
Sam Dunning, an actor who is born in Portland, raised in Brunswick, recently directed his first movie, a mock documentary in the same vein as Best in Show.
Which was a mockumentary about the dog shows.
Mm-hmm. Canoe Diggit spoofs a competitive pursuit you've likely never heard of. Well, if you've listened to all our episodes, you've heard it.
Yes.
It's called Freestyle Canoeing, and Dunning hadn't heard of it himself until a few years ago when a friend sent him a YouTube video of a guy in a dress shirt, pants, vest, and bow tie competing in freestyle canoeing as the 1986 soft rock song The Lady in Red plays in the background. Mark Ornstein.
We met him.
We had him on our podcast at the Quiet Adventure Symposium.
Yes.
Is that 2 years
ago? And I remember us going, what? You were the guy?
You're the guy! You were the guy! It sounds weird. That's because it is. I started watching it, Dunning recalled, and I was just taken aback at how wholesome and lovely and a little bit silly it was, all wrapped into one. His next step was to immediately text the friend who sent the video with the question, how has no one made this into some sort of mockumentary? And with that, he got to work. Since it was during lockdown, I had a lot of time on my hands, and I wanted to make myself chuckle every day, so I started writing. Canoe Diggit tells the story of a fictional national freestyle canoeing competition on Moosehead Lake. The cast and crew shot the film in Maine over 3 weeks at locations ranging from Thompson Lake to The Cage, a dive bar in Lewiston. The aim in the end was to poke a little fun at the freestyle canoeing community and at Maine too, but to do it with affection and respect.
Of course.
This is all coming out of a place of love, Dunning says. If it works, I've done my job. Several theaters in Maine will be showing Canoe Diggit over the next month. All screenings are at 7 p.m., except for one in Topsom, which is at 7:45. So it's in Portland, Bridgeton, Brunswick, Waldoboro, Orono, Belfast, and Topsom.
I want to see this.
I hope they put it somewhere where you can, like on YouTube
or
something.
At the very minimum, it'll eventually be released on YouTube after the theatrical run.
Right.
And,
there's so many mockumentary style things.
And everybody's
missed
this one.
Movies. You know, I mean, even like you think of Dodgeball.
Hmm.
You know, it takes the competitive Dodgeball.
Yep.
And, what was the one with, The models.
With the guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. With a tiny
Owen Wilson and then we're in it.
Yeah.
Can't remember. But it was a little tiny cell phone mocking everything about the modeling industry and all that. And movies like that are fun.
Yes.
You know, if you don't take them serious.
Yes.
You know, it's just you take those little things.
Little stabs and
expand on them and whatnot. And it can be fun. So yeah, I want to see this, Canoe Diggit. Google it if you want more information.
Already running.
Yeah. Oh yeah. It started this week.
It goes right into May. It's like, it's almost like a film fest
of this one film.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I hope Mark sees it.
That's got to spread out far and wide. I want to see this. I'd like to see this in a theater. Well, you know, it is his first directing debut, so it could suck.
So? Paddling Adventures Radio apparently gives it 1 out of 2 thumbs. Without even seeing it. But that may change. Yeah, I hope it comes around where we can actually see it somewhere and just get a little kick out of it.
Cool. Very, very cool.
Mm-hmm. We talked there a while back that people are starting to get their big expeditions for the year.
Yes.
Together.
A lot of planning.
Mm-hmm. 'Tis the season to start planning stuff. And we have our yearly Let's Paddle Across Canada.
Yes.
Thing.
It's become more and more popular lately.
Yeah. Well, because people are realizing it can be done. Because, I mean, you get like Mike Ranta, who's done it 3 times.
Yes.
You know, he's also done a coast-to-coast-to-coast thing and whatnot, so.
At the minimum, you have to be... You have to be
unemployed,
short-term unemployed.
So, anytime, I think this week, next week, 3 young Canadian paddlers will push off from the shores of Tadoussac, Quebec, beginning an 8,000-kilometer journey to Prince Rupert, British Columbia, on the Pacific Ocean. This route across the breadth of the country will take more than 200 days. Could you imagine paddling for 200 days?
No.
That'd be awesome.
Well, I don't know.
Well, except for the bug parts.
And
the snake
and there's
parts.
There's 3 of them.
Yeah.
How many canoes are there?
1, probably.
You think all 3 are in 1 canoe?
Yeah, they're doing like 16...
18.
18 stops. So
18 resupply stops, yeah.
Will Weiss, George Kirigian... and Nolan Aziz are all 24-year-olds from Toronto. Despite their age, they bring a combined 893 days of canoe tripping experience and have worked as professional canoe guides since 2019. There's a bonus.
Hmm.
Rather than following more common cross-Canada paddling routes...
This is the part that I like. I like the route they chose.
Yeah, you know what? Like it's if everybody does the same trip over and over and over and over, change it up.
Yeah.
Trio has chosen a distinctly northern line. Their plan is to avoid major urban areas and spend as much time as possible in remote lake systems. They intend to have 18 resupply stops. Nothing says you... I mean, you have to go through some towns eventually, so... Might as well not carry 200 days worth of supplies if you don't have to. 8,000-kilometer journey begins in Tadoussac, where the St. Lawrence Estuary meets the Atlantic Ocean.
So it's not really fully across Canada.
But mostly.
They skip the Maritimes.
Yeah.
Anyways.
You're just biased.
I am from the Maritimes.
Like
can't
I say,
forget
you're
us.
Just biased. As much as we try! That route spans the full width of Canada, linking waterways from the Atlantic coast to the Pacific. This route has never been paddled in recorded history. Many parts of the route are based on old indigenous travel ways and fur trading routes, as well as more modern trip reports, as he says. However, the whole route has never been attempted, as far as they know. From Tadoussac, the team will canoe inland via Saguenay Fjord and Lac Saint-Jean, to continue through remote river systems, including Oshawa-Mushuan River, before linking into the Ottawa River in Ontario. They will paddle and portage through the lake regions of Temagami to Lake Superior, then continue northwest through remote areas, such as Wabakimi Provincial Park and Woodland Caribou Provincial Park. In Manitoba, routes including the Poplar River lead them to Lake Winnipeg. From there, they travel down the Nelson River, upstream along the Burntwood River. So they're hitting a lot of historical routes and places, too, which is cool. Yeah, you're not just making a beeline straight across the center of the country, right?
And they're going against the flow. It's going up the Ottawa?
Mm-hmm.
No.
Yeah. Yep. Oh, there's definitely one when they're heading north, there's going to be against the flow.
So. Mm-hmm.
The route then continues toward Lake Athabasca and follows the Peace River across the Rocky Mountains to Williston Lake. From Summit Lake, the team will cross the Guiscombe Portage to the Fraser River system, then continue via the Nechaco River, Bulkley River, and Skeena River to Prince Rupert on the Pacific coast. It's going to be a good long trip.
It is. It's. I'm trying to find it here on the map as we go, as you listed across Canada, and it's they're quite a ways north.
Yeah.
It's a northerly route.
If you go CanadaByCanoe.com, they actually have a map there that'll show you. Which you can also, Canada by Canoe on their homepage there, you can follow the route as they go. They update it as they go. Weather will likely be increasingly stormy as fall approaches. Aziz says, we have scheduled shorter days to try to account for this. In the event of extreme adverse weather spanning large periods of time, we may try to switch to a more nocturnal schedule to take advantage of the calmer night hours. Longer days too, right?
Mm-hmm.
We will be the longest ever recorded single season canoe trip distance-wise, the youngest to ever cross Canada in a single season, and the longest ever freshwater canoe trip distance-wise. The team expects significant upstream travel and extended portages along the route, plenty of portages in the 10 to 14 kilometer range, but our longest portage is only 18 kilometers. Yeah, a lot of people tend to start BC and come east.
Yes.
They're doing the exact opposite.
Exactly. So, and so that's different, but they're also, so because of the northern route, there are fewer portages, and we heard about previous trips where there's like, you know, hundreds of kilometers of portages and so on. So it's interesting that they're going north. They're going to face worse weather.
Well, they've done their research, so, you know, they got all their maps and everything. We have done longer portages on other trips. As for upriver, about one-third of the trip is upriver. The longest river that we have to paddle up is Peace River, which will take us over a month to complete. A month on one river. At some point, you're just going to hate that river. And you'll be wondering, I wonder how far along they're going to be before they start to think, we should have started in the west. You should have, like, some sort of bet.
Yeah.
Pick your date. Pick your date where we say, we should have started the other way.
Because they're facing
day one.
Unfortunately, they're facing a late spring this year, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because the ice outs are going to be delayed because of the colder and winter, more snow over winter and so on. So it could be interesting. But, you know, it could turn around. We could get a really warm
May. I'm thinking everything's starting to melt. After this, like, sort of, not after this week, but right now, things are starting to melt.
Yep.
Because even today, that ice we got last night.
Yeah, it's gone.
By midday, everything was gone.
It's sublimated.
It was nice outside. We're at the point in our year right now where you go to work in a nice heavy jacket, and you're walking out to the truck after work in a t-shirt.
Yeah. Oh, it's hot.
Yeah, you know. So I think they'll be fine with that. I think they may run into some small spots that might delay them, but I don't think it's going to be a huge.
And when they really get out west and further, because they're right on the northern border of Saskatchewan, Alberta.
Yeah.
Like, they're way up there.
Yep.
So, but that's going to be mid-season, late season. June, July, they'll be in Saskatchewan, Alberta, I guess.
And that's when they're going to be able to get the bugs to help carry the
canoe. It'll carry them across.
They'll just carry them straight across. Ice conditions early in the expedition are another major concern. Specifically, we are concerned with ice on Lake St. Jean, as it is the largest lake we will encounter for the first month of the trip, and a major crux for our trip's success. Due to its size, it retains its cold longer and can take until mid-May to thaw in cold years. If the lake is still frozen when we get to the top of the Saguenay River, we'll have to resort to portaging 80 to 100 kilometers around the lake until we reach faster moving currents on the Ashuapmushuan River. The portage would take us more than twice the time, but moving slowly is better than not moving at all. Well, all the best to them.
Yes. It's exciting.
Yeah.
And they're not new to this, so it's not like it's a lark. They're rather experienced. They've been guiding and so on. They've already, they did the, what was the COVID one that they did?
Canoe for COVID
mm-hmm.
a few years back.
And they are raising money for charity.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember what charity was, but they're at $41,000. Their goal is $1 million.
Yep. Go to CanadaByCanoe.com. And it talks about who they are, what they're doing, the charity they're raising money for. There's maps there. There's so much more information there. CanadaByCanoe.com. Check them out. And, if you have a couple extra pennies to send their way to help them reach their goal, do it.
Yes, they're raising money for True North Aid.
Yeah.
It's Remote Indigenous Communities Charity. Provide practical humanitarian support to northern or remote Indigenous communities in Canada. Cool.
Definitely be following along.
And if they're at $41,000 so far.
It's not too bad.
Mm-hmm.
Like I say, on their front page, here's their homepage, there's a map and there's a picture of a canoe with three people in it.
Yes.
Little cartoony thing. I take it to mean that that's them.
Yes, and that's their little icon that's going to be traveling across Canada.
Yeah. And there's a dotted red line on that map you can follow, which is their route.
Yes.
And so you can see exactly where they're going.
You're
going
to see the little icon tripping across Canada.
Mm-hmm.
Very good. They spent some time and effort in the planning and organization of this.
Well, you got to read something like that to find those old routes and stuff like that and link them all together. You've definitely got to be doing your research and stuff. And when you get into places like Woodland Caribou and whatnot, yeah, they're big provincial parks, but they're not heavily used.
No,
so there are some, like when we did Woodland Caribou, yeah, there's portages, but you got to find them, right? And if they're going through areas that haven't been used in a number of years, those portages are overgrown.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Plus the fires that happen up there. Like, we went through a couple areas that we were totally black by the end of the day because all the ash and all that all over our gear, our boats, ourselves was... So it's not just, here's where we're going from point A to point B today and let's paddle.
Yeah.
You know, you got to have some skills involved. So good luck to you, boys. Keep it going. what do I got here? Peterborough. Summer paddling classes. You should take one of these. looking for a summer camp that will have your kids socializing with new friends, being active outdoors, and developing crucial life skills like leadership and teamwork? Maybe send your kids there.
Mm-hmm.
All of this and more is what they will find through youth sprint camps led by the Peterborough Canoe and Kayak Club. And there are some programs for adults, too. Established in 2017, the Peterborough Canoe and Kayak Club is a not-for-profit organization committed to engaging paddlers in the sport of sprint canoeing and kayaking through camps and programs delivered on Little Lake. What else is on Little Lake?
I don't know.
Would there be a museum there?
Is there?
A canoe museum?
Is that Little Lake? I didn't know the name of the lake.
Little Lake.
I didn't know that was the name of the lake.
The club also promotes inclusion and paddling for everyone with its Special Olympics program, one of the most successful of its kind in the province. See, that's what you do. You drop your kids off at camp, and then you go hang around the canoe museum, and then when they're done, and then the next day you bring them up and you drop them off again.
But is it a daily drop-in, or is it like Pathfinder where you dump your kid for a week or two?
This year, the youth sprint camps will be double the fun as they switch to full-day format, running from 9 till 3:30 daily, five-day camps. So for 5 days, you can be in that museum all day for five days.
With Camp Pathfinder, you could dump your kid off and come back a week later for them.
Oh. Well, point the kids towards a hotel. Say there's peanuts in the minibar. Have at her.
Set a tent up in the lawn of the Canoe Museum.
Right? See? Get the full experience.
Yeah.
Whether you're just getting on the water or are already experienced, paddlers age 7 through 13 are invited to learn the basics, practice their solo skills, and work in a team. In addition to on-water training and off-water games and activities, there will be opportunities to participate in developmental regattas designed for first-timers to compete in a friendly and fun environment. No matter what their experience level is coming in, we've got a way to challenge them to develop further in the sport, says Club Commodore Shara Pham. We tailor the camp to the kids that we've got that week and get them active and having fun on the water. The 5-day camps begin on July 6th and the 13th, 20th, 27th, and a 4-day camp beginning August 4th. Registration is also open for a high-performance training program for the youths 10 to 18, designed for paddlers who are keen to race. The program is being delivered in a new format that's focused on conditioning. That sounds too much like exercise to me. This will also make it beneficial for skiers, hockey players, and other young winter athletes looking to remain active and in shape by engaging in a full-body activity throughout their off-season. Training runs from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays for 7 weeks, beginning Monday, July 6th.
The logistics of getting your kids there. That's tough.
People often think it's just shoulders and arms being used in sprint, but it's very heavy with the core, and you use your legs for paddling quite a bit, both in canoe and kayaking. It really challenges balance and core strength. All new this year, there's also an opportunity to join the new Youth Dragon Boat Program, developed in partnership with Peterborough 4-H Association. Beginning with spring training in April, the youth team will train in preparation for Peterborough's Dragon Boat Festival, an annual fundraiser for cancer care at Peterborough Regional Health Center, taking place on Little Lake on Saturday, June 13th. High-performance training, youth dragon boat, and on-water sessions for the summer camps will be led by sprint canoeist and head coach Zoe Bergeron. Also a personal trainer, the Cobourg native has competed at 3 Canadian National Championships, represented Team Canada internationally multiple times, including in 2 World Championships. I think she might know what she's doing.
Maybe.
Maybe. Yep.
Maybe.
For the young at heart interested in taking up sprint paddling, the Peterborough Canoe and Kayak Club has also opened registration for their adult programming. There will be a flexible community program for those looking to set their own pace, an extended season competitive program for those wanting to race, and a weekly adult dragon boat team for the perfect combination of fast and fun. Peterborough Canoe and Kayak Club has boats that are suitable for paddlers with balance or mobility challenges, and boats that will help paddlers progress towards racing-style boats. Split payments are available to families who register early. For more information or to register, visit pckc.ca/programs. So that's, yeah, I mean, if you're around the Peterborough area, yep. There's a lot going on here. I mean, Peterborough is like the canoe paddling capital of
Canada.
Ontario and Canada and all that. The world! So, if you're other side of Toronto, you're going to have a bit of an issue getting your kids there every day.
Correct. But if you're right? In the area from...
It's a 5-day thing.
And it's also... So this is a very organized program, and it's has specific timings and so on. But there's also a lot of other communities out there. For example, I know that Cobourg Canoe and Kayak Club, they do dragon boat racing as well. Mm-hmm. And so, but that's a club, and you join, and I did dragon boating there years ago. And they also, they just released some newsletter or something talking about, hey, come on out. We're looking for adding to our numbers and our ranks and so on. So there's lots of communities that do that. You just have to Google it. Look for canoe and kayak clubs in your area. Doesn't matter where you are on this planet. Somebody's going to have something that has programs for youth and for adults, and it's geared towards people who are looking for, you know, some way to exercise over the summer season. If you're a winter sports person or if you're a summer sports person, this is a great opportunity to get there and participate as well.
100%.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's the big one because it's Peterborough. But like you say, there are so many smaller towns that are doing the same sort of thing. Yep. And now is the time to look into it and get your kiddies booked in there, because of it's like everything else to do with the outdoors and paddling and everything that right now, these last few years, it's going to book up fast.
Oh, absolutely. And so what's great about the Peterborough Canoe and Kayak Club is that it's very organized. So it's classes. It's like youth drop-in summer camps and so on. I think that's a great thing to, if you have kids that are into this type of thing, or you want them to be into this type of thing, like friends of ours, their kid has been going to Camp Pathfinder for 6 years now. And so he's now becoming sort of a guide at the camp. And I think that's great. It's expensive, but it's worth it if your kids are into that kind of thing.
Yeah, and like you say, it the stuff you learn that helps you later on in life is phenomenal.
Well, just working with others and you know, just learning how to deal and work with people. There's too many people that are out there that don't know how to relate, or they're stuck into video games, so they only know the digital world and so on. It's like, you know what, this is an opportunity to have your kids work with other kids and problem solve and learn to deal with group activities and so on. I think this is an important learning lesson. Plus, it's great exercise. It's opportunity to get there and do something different. So
get out of the city for a summer.
Oh, absolutely. So I think this is a great thing. I like how organized it is.
Yeah. So find yourself, like I say, if you're not out in the Peterborough, it could be anywhere across the country here or down the States.
Fly them in.
Yeah, fly them in. There's got to be somewhere around you that there people are offering paddling courses.
There's going to be stuff everywhere.
To the kids all summer. But like I say, just with as popular as it gets anymore, you better start looking now and get them booked in. Or your kids are going to be, what did you
want me? You're probably behind the eight ball right now if you're just thinking about it because we mentioned it.
Yep.
There's all of these programs are probably already mostly booking up.
Pitter-patter, let's get at her.
And from just my experience with us booking kids into gymnastics and swim classes, it's like, you know, like registration for where we live, it's 7 a.m. on the registration day. If you're not on the computer at 7 a.m., suddenly you're like, oh, booked. Oh, it's like all these classes and all these things. Like, it's tough. There's a lot of people, like swim classes, it is tough to get in there. You have to be very fast on the computer. And so it's one of those things. It's a lot of these summer programs for kids are very popular and very important.
Mm-hmm. Did my kid like swimming? No. Good, because I couldn't get him a space. Got one more thing here. This sounded kind of weird when I first came across it, but we started reading. It's understandable.
Starts to make sense.
Yeah. We're going down to good old
Australia
there.
Southern Australia.
As we round out March and head into a very jam-packed April, there's still time to enjoy the last of the warm weather, because they're different than us. So they're getting into the fall where we're getting
into spring. They're hitting fall now.
Whether that's heading down to the beach, the river, or some of our beautiful reservoirs, there are some rules we need to follow to make sure we're preserving the health of our environment. And again, this is one of the things is make sure you check out where you're going, because there may be weird rules.
Yes.
At reservoirs across the state of South Australia, kayaking, canoeing are welcome. Stand-up paddleboarding is not permitted. Our 10 reservoirs reserves are open to the general public, are perfect places for the community to explore and enjoy recreational activities such as walking, kayaking, and fishing. These sites are also vital sources of drinking water supplying customers across South Australia, and it is important that the water's safety and quality is protected. To ensure this, canoes and kayaks are the only type of watercraft permitted in our reservoirs. This rule has been actioned to protect the water quality. Minimizing human contact with water is essential to keeping our drinking water supplies safe. Human contact increases the risk of harmful pathogens contaminating the water, which is why stand-up paddleboarding is not allowed.
Apparently, a lot of people on stand-up paddleboards fall off them.
Apparently, or those yoga type people.
Yeah, there you go.
The use of stand-up paddle boards has never been permitted at any of our reservoirs. This is due to the increased chance of people falling or jumping off paddle boards, which is likely to involve prolonged contact with water above the knees. This kind of contact increases the risk of harmful pathogens, which can be carried by humans contaminating the water. We thank everyone for continuing to be safe when visiting our reservoir reserves and helping to protect our vital drinking water supplies. Along with the ban on paddleboarding, swimming, and immersion in water are also not permitted. While you may temporarily wade below the knee, only for the purpose of launching your canoe or kayak, and to retrieve or release a fish, when carrying out any of these activities, SA Water urge you to limit your contact with the water. This rule also helps keep you safe from the potential effects of blue-green algae, which may be present in the water and can be toxic to people and animals. As noted, kayaks and canoes are welcome at Happy Valley, South Para, Warren, Maiponga, and Bundaleer reservoirs, with dedicated launch areas at each site. Accessible kayak launch facilities are available at Happy Valley, Maiponga, and Warren reservoirs. An important note is that these launch areas are designed for kayaks and canoes and do not allow for other on-water craft, such as sailboats or rowing boats.
Interesting, eh?
If you're planning on kayaking or canoeing, please ensure you wear an approved life jacket. For all the keen fishers out there, from your kayak or canoe, fishing is permitted at these five reservoirs with a current permit. By following the reservoir rules, South Australians can enjoy outdoor activities while helping to protect water quality and the surrounding environment. Whether you're paddling, fishing, or simply appreciating nature, responsible recreation makes sure these beautiful spots remain pristine for future generations.
Interesting.
Because all the kids that go swimming are all going to pee in the drinking water.
And all stand-up paddle boarders are filthy.
Right? All those dirty people falling off their paddle boards, jumping in to cool off in the middle of the lake, getting the drinking water dirty. You figure it would be all just banned altogether.
Well, you'd think. So I question this, why they're splitting hairs on who is capable of staying out of the water and who's not. And to a degree that you're going to stipulate, you know, you can enter the water to get into your canoe or kayak up to your knees only, or you can reach into the water with your hand, but you can't submerge.
So what about all those people in kayaks that roll?
Right.
Bunch of freaks.
I guess we're assuming that those are clean people.
Those are the only clean people can kayak. You can roll your kayak in the reservoir as long as you don't touch the water while doing so.
It's going to make you wonder, like, what is there any science behind this? Like, is there any empirical evidence behind the fact that, you know, full submersion does in a large reservoir like these, because there's, what, 10 of them that feed most of Southern Australia. Like, are they, I don't have the impression that they're small, like the size of a swimming pool, but it's, what pathogens are we talking about here?
Well, the way the article's written, you know they're trying to be polite about
it. They're polite.
But when you get 50 people all of a sudden showing up to swim with their kids.
Yes. Might be some dirty diapers involved or dirty people.
So there's going to be pathogens.
E. coli.
The word pathogens in quotes. Somebody pathogened in the water. Yeah, so I think, well, I like the fact that it lets you go out in their canoes and kayaks.
Yes,
they do some fishing.
Limited access. I don't know. I would love to know if there's some science behind this. Mm-hmm.
Time to do some Googling.
Exactly.
Send them a message. How come? What's the exact? And they're probably going to say, because somebody's going to poop in our water reserves.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you're going down there, take your canoe, leave your stand-up paddleboard
exactly.
At home. Just leave it there. We're getting very close to the end of the outdoor shows. A couple weeks till
there's left. Only a few weeks left.
Ottawa Outdoor and Adventure Travel Show, 25th and 26th of April. Nepean, Ontario at the Nepean Sportsplex. Free admission and parking. Yoo-hoo! Outdoor gear, equipment, paddlecraft are going to be there, along with a whole bunch of other stuff. AdventureOttawaD.ca for more info on that. And the three different weekends of Lock and Paddle are coming. Lachine Canal, Montreal, Saturday, July 11th. Peterborough Lift Lock, Saturday, July 18th. Hartswell Lock in Ottawa on Saturday, August 15th. So we could do all three of them in 1 year if we wanted.
Uh-huh.
Parks.canada.ca for more information. I think that's all I got this week.
I don't have anything to add.
I'm thinking there was something else, and I can't remember what it was.
We'll talk about it next week.
If I remember what it was.
Well, what was the math we did on beers?
Lots of beers. Yeah, we should have. We're doing that hindsight is 20/20. I was going to say 50/50.
Because we could have done this.
If we would have right back at the beginning took a picture of every beer can that we drank, we would have like.
Well,
lots of pictures.
529 episodes.
No, not quite. Because we drank some at some of the places we've gone.
Sure.
Different ones.
Yep.
But here we've had some of them multiple times.
Yes, in the home studio.
Right. So, but yeah, we have it quite a number, like close to 500, if mm-hmm. not just over.
Yep.
Right.
All at once.
500 all at once. That's a lot of air.
We are responsible.
Yes. Derek only comes here and has one
because
mm-hmm. he has to drive home. I only have one because I have to walk upstairs. Yeah, it's something we joke about it, but it's something you can't be stupid about when you're drinking. And
yep.
Especially if you got to drive. And a lot of our shows done over the winter and stuff like that. You know, I hate to be getting that phone call going, did Derek leave yet? 3 hours ago. Be smart about it. Same with your paddling. What is it? Water on the water, beer on the pier?
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
But I know there's a lot of people that go out there and there's pictures. Yeah, sitting in our canoe and kayak having a beer.
Bad choices.
Yeah. Each into their own.
Yep. And because the marine... Safety, the Transportation Act, whatever. Mm-hmm. Anyways, you can be charged for drinking and driving if you are in a canoe consuming alcohol.
Yep. Yep. There was a court case for that one.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, involved the death of a child.
Yep, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. Nothing else, right?
Nothing.
You sure?
Uh-huh.
Positive?
Mm-hmm.
100%?
Yep.
All right. Where'd HR go?
That cat rant wandered off a little while ago.
Well, apparently we passed inspection. Yep. HR left.
Yep.
Or else he's hiding over there somewhere, keeping an eye. Just
maybe listening to us.
Surveillance.
Listening to us. Make sure we don't go off script.
Anyway. Nope, still can't remember what I was going to tell you. Anyway, if you want to find out more about us, you can find us at paddlingadventuresradio.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. You can download or stream all our episodes on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music, Player FM, and all your favorite podcast downloading sites. Or just go to the episode page at paddlingadventuresradio.com and you can stream or download all our episodes there. If you enjoy the podcast, please share it with friends, family, and fellow paddlers. I want to thank everybody for listening this week. I'm Sean Rowley.
And I'm Derek Specht. We'll see you next time.